This is Gulf Coast Life. I'm Mike Canary. Thanks for joining us. Another week of experiencing life with the new coronavirus has gone by, and the rate of new cases in Florida has declined by about 20% versus the week before. Area hospitals are not currently being overwhelmed by new cases. Since last week, there have been 125 new confirmed COVID-19 cases in Lee County, 91 new cases in Collier County, 46 new cases in Charlotte County, 43 new cases in Hendry County, and Glades County is still reporting 6 cases in all. There have been 98 coronavirus-related deaths across southwest Florida so far, 145 if you include Sarasota County. Overall, the Florida Department of Health's COVID-19 data and surveillance dashboard puts the latest number of confirmed cases in all of Florida at 36,897. That's up from 32,138 last Monday at this time, and 26,660 the week before that. The rate of increase statewide had been staying steady at about 6,000 new cases a week for the past month or so, but this past week it dropped to about 4,500 new cases week over week. Hospitals are resuming elective and urgent surgeries today, and new research has led to the FDA granting emergency use authorization for an antiviral drug called remdesivir, which was apparently originally developed to treat Ebola. On today's show, we're going to learn more about it and the research that's led to its conditional approval, as well as a few other things. I'm joined once again by infectious disease Dr. Doug Brust from Lee Health. Dr. Brust, welcome back to the show.
Thank you, Mike.
And Dr. Sharon Esern is a molecular virologist and professor at Florida Gulf Coast University. Dr. Esern, welcome back to you as well.
Hi, Mike. Glad to be back.
And we are live today, so if you'd like to ask a question or make a comment, find the post for this show on the WGCU Public Media Facebook page or find us on Twitter. Just use the hashtag GCL. So real quick, before we start talking about remdesivir, we just heard that newscast, and apparently the FDA is going to be tightening how well it lets companies offer antibody testing. Was that news to both of you, or is that something that either of you had heard before Richard Harris reported it for us?
That was not news to me. I'm sure it wasn't news to Sharon either.
No, I was kind of hoping that at some point they would be tightening up their testing so that, the test became more reliable.
Okay. Well, we'll talk a little bit more about down the road, but let's start with remdesivir. It's an antiviral drug. Sharon, can you start off with some background on this kind of drug, how it works, how they're developed, that sort of thing?
Sure. This one in particular is made by Gilead. It's called a nucleotide analog drug. Just to talk a little bit about what that really means, a critical step in virus replication is the process of making many copies of the viral genome. So this is the virus's genetic blueprint inside of infected cells. So these drugs don't prevent viruses from entering cells. It prevents their replication once they're inside cells. The genomes are then packaged into particles, and then they can exit the host cell and infect other cells in the same host or go and find other hosts. And the way that viruses make more copies of their genomes is using enzymes called polymerases. And a nucleotide analog inhibits polymerases. In other words, it caused the polymerase enzyme to malfunction. And so the idea behind a nucleotide analog drug is then to use it as an antiviral is to prevent the virus from replicating once inside the cell. Polymerases are also found in cells, but I tend to think of them as sewing machines. It takes the building blocks of genomes and pieces them together to make either RNA or DNA. And so the pieces, the building blocks, these are the nucleotides, and hence the name nucleotide analogs. And it takes the polymerases will then take these nucleotides and sews them together as if piecing a quilt to make a bigger piece of fabric. The cells have their own sewing machines, so they have their own polymerases. So it's really important when designing a viral drug to inhibit polymerases that they're not hurting or causing harm to the actual host. And so the nucleotide analogs, they look almost like the host cell building blocks, but are structurally a little bit different. And it turns out that viral polymerases, they don't discriminate. They tend to not be as picky as cellular polymerases, and they might be fooled into using these nucleotide analogs and incorporate them into their genomes, and in essence, it causes them to stop growing the chain. And this is why this particular class of nucleotide analog is called a chain terminator. And so the key in designing these is to prevent the virus from making more of its genome while keeping the cell healthy and not fool the cell itself to use them. And nucleotide analogs have been drugs have been used for treatment of HIV, hepatitis B, hepatitis C, and herpes, as well as used for anti-cancer treatment. So the class of drugs is not new onto itself, but this particular one, remdesivir, has not been approved anywhere globally for any use. And so this is an experimental drug that is now being looked at for coronavirus antiviral activity. It has shown some promise in vitro in cells, and now there's 6 ongoing human clinical trials to test its efficacy in humans.
I don't want to go too far into this, but if it was being developed originally to treat Ebola, was there something about that development process that was targeted to how Ebola works, and how much different does Ebola work than a coronavirus like COVID, what causes COVID-19?
So Ebola also, one of its goals, like any other virus, is to make more copies of its genome. So it was targeting the viral polymerase enzyme, and it was used for a few of the outbreaks back in 2013, 2016, and more recently all the way up to 2019. But they found in its use that it was significantly less effective than using monoclonal antibody treatments, and so its use for Ebola has not continued.
Dr. Brust, what can you tell us about remdesivir and, you know, this class of drugs and how it's used, and what are your thoughts on its being used now in the studies that have led to it?
So just to sort of jump off where Sharon took off, so remdesivir is an antiviral. We have quite a bit of experience, especially in HIV, with using antivirals similar to remdesivir that actually replace one of the nucleotides and actually cause one of the enzymes to stop working. It in vitro, it means in the test tube, it has excellent activity against Ebola, Marburg, the original SARS, and MERS, but it failed clinically against Ebola, more than likely because Ebola is a very different type of clinical disease than COVID-19 that we're seeing. People rapidly die, and the mechanism of their getting really sick may not be related to viral replication. And remember, we talked about this before, that there are early in disease, the virus itself may be responsible for the patient being ill. Later in disease, it may be other mechanisms that are at effect. And Marburg and Ebola are these hemorrhagic diseases that potentially working against the virus did not help. Although antibody, which is similar to what we're doing for the Mayo clinical trial, did help people with Ebola. There was a major clinical trial that came out. Do you want me to discuss that now, Mike?
Go right ahead.
Okay, so the remdesivir has received emergency use authorization by the FDA, which means that it has not gone through the strict and sort of very vigorous screening and approval process to become FDA approved. But because we are in this emergency situation, there was one trial that will eventually become a registry trial to get approval that was called the ACT trial. It's adaptive COVID-19 treatment trial. And that was a well-designed trial. If you recall before, we've talked about activity of remdesivir against SARS-CoV-2. That's the virus that causes COVID-19 disease. In trials where there was no control group, that means there's no group of patients that received a sham, a placebo, sort of like a water pill, although this is, excuse me, a sugar pill, not a water pill. Although in this case, it is like water, like saline, because it's an intravenous drug.
Mm-hmm.
So this is a well-designed trial. So this was sponsored by the NIAID. That's the branch of the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Disease. That's the branch of the National Institute of Health, the NIH, that Dr. Fauci heads up. And it was randomized. That means there were 1,063 patients that were hospitalized that had COVID-19 disease. It was advanced, so they were very sick and they had lung involvement. And then if they were able to consent, or one of their family members could consent, they got randomized to either get a placebo or remdesivir. And no one knew what they were getting. It was blinding. and they went into the trial, and they were given 10 days of the active drug or the placebo. And the primary endpoint, like what we were looking for, what there was improvement, time to recovery. And this is a metric that we use in influenza trials. So time to recovery is defined as being well enough for hospital discharge or return to normal activity level. And then they also looked at what's called the secondary endpoint, whether it actually impacted on mortality, whether people that got active drug, remdesivir, actually lived a higher proportion of them lived than those that did not. And when we do clinical trials, especially a clinical trial like this that has a placebo arm, it's monitored by a board of people that actually take a look at the data to say whether or not the agent is working or not. Because if it is working, then we're morally obligated to stop the trial and take people off of placebo and then give them active drug. And that's how things be. That's very standard in all clinical trials. So near the end of, actually on my father's 92nd birthday, April 27th, the DSMB took a look at the data, and they saw that remdesivir, the people that were getting active remdesivir were faring much better than the placebo. So they actually broke the blind on the trial and allowed the people to cross over that were giving placebo and so they would be on active remdesivir. So what they found, the findings of that trial, this trial has not been published yet, so it has not been peer-reviewed. And unfortunately, we're doing science, and Sharon can kick in on this also, by press release, which is, you know, not the best way to be doing science, but, you know, we're in the middle of a pandemic. So you have to think about the source. So the source is from the NIH, and, you know, Dr. Fauci actually went over the findings, and there was a press release. So in the press release, which is what I'm relying on because the paper has not been published yet, people that got remdesivir actually improved, had a faster recovery time than those that got placebo by 31%. So that translated into their being able to be discharged or getting better at 11 days compared to 15 days. And then there was also a suggestion that there was a survival benefit, that people that got remdesivir had a lower mortality at 8% than those that did not get remdesivir. So the placebo group had a mortality of 11.6%. Now, that didn't reach statistical significance, but the trial hasn't been looked at completely yet. And also, remember, this was given to people who had very advanced disease and had lung disease. So for that population, this is what the outcome was. Hospitalized patients that had advanced COVID-19 and lung involvement.
You mentioned
go on.
Oh no, I was just going to say you mentioned that it's administered like via IV, right? So this is not something that
they can easily give people pills or something. No, it is not. That's one of the major drawbacks is intravenous. It was giving almost simultaneously. Gilead released data from a trial that looked at a comparison of giving a 10-day course, which was what the sort of course was used on this trial versus 5 days. And in this open label trial, where everyone knew that they were getting the drug, there was no difference between 10 and 5 days. So more than likely, the way it'll be used in clinical practice is a 5-day course of the medication.
Any idea how? I was just going to ask. Any idea how available it is? Is it something that at Lee Health can order? I mean, how does that work?
Not yet. So it's actually not available yet.
I did want to add to the particular. So this one clinical trial is one of six that are currently being done. There's another one that was actually published in the Lancet Journal a little while ago, and this was done in China. It was also a randomized, double-blind, placebo-controlled, multi-center trial. It was done in Hubei, China, with 10 hospitals involved in the study. And their conclusions are not as strong as the press release coming from the NIAID, the National Institutes of Allergy and Infectious Diseases. Now, this one Chinese study was smaller, 237 patients, but they didn't really find statistical benefits observed looking at treatment and compared to standard care. Again, their caveats were that our study is smaller, but they did find something that was interesting that was not reported by the press release from NIAID, in that the Chinese study found adverse effects that were reported in 66% of the patients that were involved in the trial. And then some of these adverse effects were severe enough that the patients were taken, the remdesivir was removed from their treatment because the patients were having these adverse effects. And so just the caveat, as Doug mentioned, about press releases, that's not peer-reviewed. The data is being reported but not shared, so it cannot be independently evaluated by scientists. So, you know, I couldn't go in and take a look to see, you know, what their figures look like, what their data look like. And so the NIAID study is promising in that it had a more patients. It actually had more groups, 68 sites, as opposed to 10 sites. But on the other hand, it's important to be able to look at the data. There's two other clinical trials that are ongoing, or actually four other clinical trials that are ongoing, two by the pharmaceutical company itself. There's another one in France that's also being looked at, and then a second one in China. So the two that have been reported or talked about, the NIAID one was done with severe cases, as well as the Lancet report that was also severe cases. The other Chinese clinical trial, human clinical trial, is for moderate cases. And so there's going to be some additional data coming out for the use of this drug. But so far, the two reports that are out there, the published paper and the press release, their data does not necessarily support each other's data.
Presumably. Go ahead, Doug.
Well, one caveat I want to add, in fact, what I was going to say is that, first of all, there's no, remember, we talk about efficacy, but we don't have safety data from at least the one that Sharon has just mentioned, the one I was discussing. But we do know that the Chinese trial was underpowered. That means it was not powered. That means the number of patients that were selected was not powered to answer the question correctly. Unfortunately, they did not enroll enough patients. They had wanted to enroll more patients, but they could not enroll enough patients to go on. So that's called the powering of a clinical trial. So it wasn't powered correctly to answer the question that was put forth.
I want to move on to the convalescent plasma stuff, but real quick, I would presume that the FDA's emergency use authorization approval was based on more than just the press release, right?
It better have been.
If you're just joining the show today.
But you never know anymore.
Well, yeah. If you're just joining the show, we're discussing the latest science happening around COVID-19, especially with the antiviral drug remdesivir. My guests are Dr. Doug Brust from Lee Health. He's an infectious disease doctor and FGCU professor, Dr. Sharon Esern. To ask a question before we run out of time, you can go to the WGCU Public Media Facebook page and find a post for this show there and leave a comment, and they'll send it in to me. So, Dr. Brust, what is the update on the convalescent plasma study? This is the first day of week three, if I've got the math right.
Well, right. So we've collected. So actually, we're very happy to announce that we've actually started using plasma in patients, and that we've collected, thanks to people that have recovered from COVID-19 and have a positive test. Please, I need to have you guys still, if you want to participate in donating blood, which will be actually processed to get convalescent plasma so that we can use it for this clinical trial looking at giving that plasma and transferring antibodies that are presumably in that plasma over to people that are actively sick with COVID-19. So we've really had a great outpouring. We have about 20 units already that have been processed, and we've actually given five of those units since Thursday to patients that were sick in the hospital in the Lee Health system. So it really has been quite a success as far as being able to start up from really nothing. And I really want to congratulate multiple people involved, especially the Shipley Cardiothoracic Research Team, that has helped me enormously, and also our blood bank. The blood bank at Lee Health has really done acrobats to get these things up and going.
So the patients who are getting it, how do you quantify whether it has a beneficial effect?
So the way the study is written is the primary endpoint is only whether or not we are able to get the patient plasma or not. That's it.
Okay.
And the secondary endpoint is safety. So the tertiary investigated endpoints are going to be looked at by Mayo and comparing them in a statistical fashion to a group of patients that did not receive active product. So once again, this trial is plagued with not having a control group to make the comparison. However, the reason this trial developed was because we know convalescent plasma helps in many other viral illnesses, and other illnesses in particular. And there was really truly reason to believe that it may clinically benefit people So they want to start a trial as rapidly as possible and enroll as many people as possible to see, given that there's a pandemic right now, and actually doing the trial and developing the trial in real time. I don't think this has ever been done before. So it really is, you know, a new way to go about doing a clinical trial.
We've only got about 2 minutes left, but Governor DeSantis announced this week that the Florida Division of Emergency Management had received 200,000 antibody tests. I know we mentioned at the top of the show that some of the tests that are floating around are maybe being brought back in by the FDA, but have any of those made it down here into Southwest Florida? Is there any antibody testing going on here yet?
We're going to be... So you can commercial labs are offering antibody testing like LabCorp and Quest, which your physician can write scripts to those labs particular, and you'll have to have blood sent off to those labs. Lee Health is going to be starting, and I can't give the exact date, but probably mid to late May, starting doing antibody testing in select populations using the Ortho platform to test for antibodies. So we've reviewed many, many antibody tests right now. This one has an emergency use authorization, and so that's the one we're going to go with at BeHealth.
Okay. Well, that is all the time we have for today's show. Dr. Doug Brust is an infectious disease doctor with Lee Health. Dr. Brust, thank you for your time and your insights, especially on this remdesivir stuff.
Thank you so much, Mike.
And Dr. Sharon E. Cern is a molecular virologist who's also a professor in the Department of Biological Sciences at Florida Gulf Coast University. Sharon, thanks for your time as well.
Thanks, Mike. Always a pleasure.
If you missed any of today's show, you can always hear episodes in their entirety on our website, wgcu.org/GCL, or you can subscribe to our podcast feed wherever you get your podcasts. Our show today was produced by yours truly. Our director is Richard Chinqui. Our social media coordinator is Tara Callaghan. For now, thanks for listening. I'm Mike Canary. This is WGCU-FM, Fort Myers 90.1, WMKO Marco Island 91.7 FM, NPR for Southwest Florida.